It amounted to blasphemy. It amounted to insulting Islam.
Violent protests continue in Pakistan. It's Monday, November 27th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us for Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the Pope visits Myanmar and Bangladesh. Australia maps a new foreign policy. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Pakistani Islamists clashed with security forces for a second day Sunday on the outskirts of Pakistan's capital, Islamabad, burning vehicles before withdrawing to a protest camp they have occupied for more than 2 weeks. Hospital officials said nearly 200 people were hurt, most of them police. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with veteran correspondent Ayaz Ghul, reporting for VOA from Islamabad.
Well, we still have sort of a stalemate prevailing because a police crackdown was launched Saturday morning to disperse these protesters. But because the moment the news of the crackdown went out, the number of protesters started increasing and going up to from several thousand to 10 or 12,000 people. That made the job of the security forces, the police forces primarily, very difficult. And there were then clashes that broke out, resulted in injuries and, in fact, several deaths, prompting the administration of the capital city to halt the operation because apparently the protesters were really determined not to give in and to continue with their with their protest until their demands were met. So we still have them sitting at the main interchange that leads to Islamabad. And as a result of this crackdown, we now have in several cities of Pakistan a small protest taking place on main highways near the railway stations and bus stations. So basically bringing intercity traffic to a halt also.
What is the cause of the protest?
Well, these they're demanding. Basically, it started several weeks ago when the parliament approved a new bill. And in that bill, there was a minor change that the parliament introduced, and that was related to the membership oath. You know, when parliamentarians take oaths to become members, there was a minor change that occurred, which the government said was a clerical error. But according to these religious protesters, it amounted to blasphemy. It amounted to insulting Islam. So they started pressurizing the government. And obviously, not only that the pressure increased out on the street, but from within the parliament, there were right-wing parties and religious parties who condemned this action and forcing the government to reverse that change. And they restored the original clause in its original state. So, but that did not make these protesters happy. They said because it amounted to blasphemy, so whoever was responsible for introducing this change must be exposed, must be brought to justice and penalized. And they have demanded from the outset that the law minister should be punished because it is the responsibility of the law minister to write or remove such clauses. And that is what they have been now primarily demanding, that unless and until the law minister is removed and punished, they will not disperse. Obviously, the protesters, their leaders have vowed to continue until the entire government steps down. That is the latest demand from these protesters today.
What is the overall effect of these protests on everyday life in the major cities of Pakistan, and do you see any way out of this?
Well, in the last 24 hours, life has almost come to a standstill all over Pakistan because major motorways have been blocked. and people cannot travel. Intercity travel has been almost impossible, and that has forced, in fact, administrations in different cities, including Islamabad, to shut down schools and other education institutions for the next 2 days. So, and secondly, it has been very difficult for people to know exactly what has been happening, because there has been a complete shutdown of media and social media. The government has just cut all options for people to know what is happening around the country, although just a couple of hours ago, they restored the private television channels who have started a broadcast just like a couple of hours ago. At least people are knowing that what is the latest situation. But again, these broadcasts are being controlled through an executive order. Television stations have been instructed not to show live pictures of these demonstrations. So, frankly speaking, as of this moment, it is very difficult to say what is happening all over the country. When we speak to people, individuals in cities like Karachi, Lahore, people tell us they're stuck. They've gone there like on private visits, on official visits, and they have not been able to come back to Islamabad, or those who are in Islamabad are stuck here for the next few days. So as I said, the stalemate is prevailing, and we really don't foresee any solution in the next 2-3 days unless one of the parties, gives in. But whoever does it will have to face serious consequences.
Ayaz Ghul is VOA's reporter in Pakistan. He's been doing it for many, many years, and we appreciate it. And Ayaz, thanks for being with us.
These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Pakistan Islamists rally after deadly clashes with police. Thousands of tourists stranded as Bali volcano spews ash. Nepal votes in key election, hoping for stability. For Cambodian techies, U.S. tour ends with vision of startup at home. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Pope Francis visits Myanmar and neighboring Bangladesh today amid international outrage over what the United States describes as the ethnic cleansing of Myanmar's Rohingya Muslim minority. During the trip lasting through December 2nd, the Pope will meet with Myanmar's civilian and military leaders, as well as Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh. As Jusamin Oni reports, all eyes are on the pontiff to see how he handles the diplomatic minefield in Myanmar, also known as Burma.
A message from the Pope to the Burmese people as he prepares to visit their nation.
Desidero inviare una parola di saluto e di amicizia.
I wish to send a word of greetings and friendship to all the people. I look forward to being with you. I come to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ, a reconciliation, peace, and forgiveness message.
The first papal trip ever to Myanmar comes 6 months after full diplomatic ties were forged in May, during a visit by the country's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, who has since come under international pressure over the plight of the Rohingya. More than half of the Rohingya Muslim populations have fled their homes in the Rakhine state after an August attack by Rohingya insurgents sparked a brutal military crackdown. Refugees residing in camps in neighboring Bangladesh accuse Myanmar's army of rape, mass murders, and destruction of villages, allegations which the military denies. Experts warn the pontiff is plunging into a diplomatic minefield.
The vast majority of people in Myanmar do not believe the international narrative of abuse against the Rohingya and the refugee numbers that we're seeing in Bangladesh. That is just not accepted as fact here in Myanmar. And so I think if the Pope did come and weigh in heavily on this issue, it would inflame tensions, it would inflame sentiment, public sentiment.
Pope Francis will once again meet with State Councilor Suu Kyi and separately with the head of the country's army. The outspoken Pope has been cautioned not to even use the term Rohingya, as Myanmar does not recognize the ethnic group to be of legitimate status.
If he uses the word Rohingya, some of the Buddhist nationalists might then protest and complain about that. And some of the Catholics in the country are very nervous about that because they fear that they could be targeted by nationalists.
The Pope will also meet with Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh, where hundreds of thousands are sheltering in refugee camps. Myanmar has agreed to take back some of the refugees, so long as they can prove their residency, but the details are still unclear. As Catholics in Myanmar await the head of the church, a prayer that his visit brings peace and divine intervention to ease tensions. Jesus Samaoni, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, tens of thousands of eligible voters in northern Nepal cast ballots Sunday in an historic election. They are choosing local and national lawmakers in the country's first provincial polls. The two-stage vote will see the more populous South casting ballots December 7th. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always very happy to have you with us on VOA Asia. Australia's latest blueprint for foreign policy says that greater self-reliance is needed as the country prepares for a world in which the United States retreats and China becomes more powerful and unpredictable. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Opportunity, security, strength are the three words on the cover of Australia's latest foreign policy document. The white paper is the first since 2003 and sets out Canberra's global strategy for the next decade. Its blunt assessment is that China is challenging America's position as the dominant force in the Asia-Pacific region. The policy blueprint argues the US will remain crucial to Australia's national security, but says Canberra must build even closer ties to Beijing. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull believes Australia must adapt to an evolving world order.
We are navigating a rapidly changing multipolar world in which each of the major players are testing their relationships with each other while undergoing rapid change themselves. In the past, we could safely assume that the world worked in a way that suited Australia. Now power is shifting and the rules and institutions are under challenge.
The White Paper describes uncertainty in the Asia-Pacific region and calls on the Australian government to build stronger ties with other regional nations, such as India, Indonesia, Japan and South Korea. Turnbull has also stressed that his country must also take greater responsibility for its own security and prosperity. A military alliance with the United States dates back to the early 1950s. Bates Gill, a professor of Asia-Pacific Security Studies at Macquarie University in Sydney, agrees that Australia shouldn't be overly reliant on the US.
Australia must recognize that in this more volatile period, in a period of greater unpredictability, as to the continued commitment on the part of the United States to its engagement in this region, it has to look for other options and not be so reliant, as the White Paper notes, on this long-standing and traditional relationship with the United States.
Australia has also raised concerns about the pace and scale of China's activities in the contentious South China Sea, prompting Beijing to insist that Canberra shouldn't get involved in the wide-ranging territorial dispute. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We say hello to everybody who's listening in the Philippines via DZUP 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines, Diliman, Quezon City. Thanks for joining us today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, John Ellison, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. We also invite you to stop by VOA Asia Facebook online. Check out all the great stories that are available online. And also, you can send us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Our email as well is voaasia@voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead.